I don't know if any of you are familiar with the music of Dave Frischberg. He's a jazz pianist and a songwriter who writes very clever and witty songs. He has a wonderful song about Paris. He has a song about the Dodgers. And he has a song called Blizzard of Lies, which strings together all the things that people say that aren't true. The check is in the mail, service with a smile, I'll be right there. And one that I don't think he has in the song, but we say all the time and isn't really true, is I knew it. You watch the Olympic event, someone stumbles, you go, I knew it, I knew it. But of course you didn't know it. It just feels like you should have known it. So afterwards you say, I knew. But I'm going to tell you something that I really knew. And I wish I hadn't known it, but I did. And, of course, since I wouldn't be telling you this, if it weren't the case, I was right. Bless you. And even when it's about something bad, there's something sweet in being able to say I was right. It was when I heard about the shooting at the Sikh temple. I remember after I heard about it, one of the first things that crossed my mind, before I had any idea who had done it, I just saw shooting at Sikh temple, kills however many, I think at first they thought 9. The first thing that crossed my mind after, oh, this is terrible, is whoever did this, and I don't know who it is, hates Jews. I knew it would be the case. Even though he didn't go into a synagogue and do it. Because I knew whether he was from the right or from the left. Whether he was a jihadist or a fascist. It didn't matter. He was going to hate Jews. Now that's a very peculiar thing to think about somebody who directs their hostility towards another group that has very little to do with Jews, since really Sikh-Jewish relations are not at the top of either community's agenda. But it tells you something about the nature of racist national hatreds in this world. It's not, by the way, like Jews never have terrorists, right? We do. Baruch Goldstein. But the number is vanishingly small. Very few, and it didn't occur to me for a second that the person who had walked into the Sikh temple would have been a Jew. And the reason that I bring this up is because we know that this scourge of anti-Semitism, amazingly enough, some half century or more after the end of the Second World War, is on the rise. Now, you expect rabbis to say that. But the State Department said the same thing in their 2011 report. That worldwide anti-Semitism is on the rise. And God knows the State Department is not inclined to find anti-Semitism where it isn't. And we know also that one of the features of anti-Semitism in this world, like every great hatred, is it masks itself until it has an opportunity to show itself. That's why, if you want to hear anti-Semitism, it is best to listen to anti-Semites talk among themselves. The presence of an outside thing inhibits it, although there are other things that Stanislaw Lech, who was a Polish writer, said that growing up in Poland, what he discovered was that alcohol and anti-Semitism cannot coexist in the same body. Pour one in and the other comes out. So there are other things also that release anti-Semitism in a person. But what you're seeing now actually, in some ways, is the liberation of anti-Semitism all across the globe for two reasons. One is because now you can blame it on Israel. I'm not anti-Semitic. I just don't like the way Israel is behaving. We hear this all the time, from every quarter, even from people who nobody believes, like the president of Iran, who says that Israel is the cause of war in the world. To which I'd like to point out two things. First of all, remember, for those who argue that the reason that there's no peace in the Middle East is because Israel has occupied these territories, that before 1967, before there were any territories, there was no peace. And for those who claim that Israel is the cause of war, remember that before 1948, the world was not exactly peaceful. It had gone through the two most destructive wars in the history of humanity in the previous 50 years when there was no Israel. So when somebody points to Israel as the cause of war, as opposed to whatever criticisms they may have of certain policies, you can be certain without a doubt that it's just anti-Semitism hiding. And the existence of the State of Israel has given, in a strange way, cover to anti-Semites to be anti-Semitic without saying it, because in polite company, of course, everybody is fond of Jews. But then there is a second liberation of anti-Semitism, if we can speak of it that way. And that is that even though nobody thinks dictators are wonderful things, dictators do often have the ability to suppress the bad parts of the popular will along with the good parts of the popular will. So war didn't break out in the Balkans when Tito had his heavy hand on Yugoslavia, but the moment the Soviet Union collapsed and Tito was gone, there were massacres right and left. Was there a huge popular expression of anti-Semitism in Egypt when Mubarak was dictator? No. But now that the wonderful blessing of expression of the popular will has come to the Egyptian people, you can hear what they really think. And it's a strange thing in Jewish history to be rooting for the army of the enemy, because after all, in Egypt, the army and the Muslim Brotherhood are on opposite sides of the power struggle. And so Jews are faced with a new reality, because throughout the Muslim world now, there are going to be increasingly expressions of the popular will, and the popular will is not, need I tell you, favorable to Jews. I'm not saying unfavorable to Israel. I take that for granted. But you and I both know it's not only about Israel. In a recent survey by the ADL of countries in Western Europe, the two most anti-Semitic countries in Western Europe were Hungary and Spain. In other words, a country that got rid of its Jews in the 20th century and a country that got rid of its Jews in the 15th century. A medieval expulsion and a modern execution. In other words, you don't have to have Jews around to hate Jews. Because what kind of presence do you think Jews really have in Hungary and Spain today? I was in Budapest. I was not flooded with Jews. I walked into that huge, beautiful, cavernous synagogue. Believe me, there are a lot more people here this morning. But the absence of Jews doesn't mean the absence of the dislike of Jews. And that is a despairing thing. But I pointed out not only because it is so disturbing, but because it is so important. It is so important. Anti-Semitism is a worldwide political force. It matters. It changes the way people react. It changes the maneuvering ability, even of statesmen who are favorable to Jews and to Israel. And we cannot forget that. And we cannot ignore it. There was a short period, a sort of honeymoon, in American Jewish history and in Western European history, when anti-Semitism from about 1950 to maybe a little after the collapse of the Soviet Union was a negligible force. Nobody would have the chutzpah, if I can use that word, to express anti-Semitic statements publicly right after the destruction of European Jewry. But now what we are witnessing is what Freud called the return of the repressed. That is, when you push something down long enough, when it finally comes up, it explodes. So you cannot travel virtually anywhere in the world except in those places that are really blessedly free of any significant history of interaction with Jews without encountering anti-Semitic stereotypes, images, individuals. There is no way to contemplate the policies of Israel without taking that into account. You cannot be sure that the people you deal with today will be the people you deal with tomorrow, or that the attitudes you hear today will be the attitudes you'll hear tomorrow. That's the reality of the neighborhood that we live in. But we American Jews have to know that as well. It is true. We are extraordinarily sensitive to the slightest vibrations of anti-Semitism in the world. But if there is any paranoia that has justification in history, it is this one. So pay attention. Listen carefully. Listen to what is said and what is not said by leaders all around the world. Because this is real, and it is enduring, and it's not going away anytime soon. Remember that it's true that sometimes hatred dissipates, or it doesn't get acted on, or it stays dormant. But that's not the history of this hatred. It's just not. Not then, whenever then is in history, and not today. There are lots of speculations, lots of reasons about why anti-Semitism might exist. In the end, for our purposes, I don't know if it matters, and I certainly don't know if we can come to any conclusion. We just need to know that it's real. And that the Jewish community as a community has to use all of its resources, financial, political, intellectual, to try to combat it. I've said this before, but I'll say it again. I remember when I began in the rabbinate, when I first became a rabbi, and I would listen, having grown up on my father's sermons, to how often he would warn about anti-Semitism and how grateful I felt that it didn't have to be a theme of the way that I was a rabbi, as it had been a theme for him because of the world that he grew up in and the world that he saw. But in this, as in many things, he was right and I was wrong. He told me it wouldn't go away so fast. It hasn't. And it won't. I wish that were not true. But we're Jews, and we don't have the luxury of deceiving ourselves. Shabbat shalom.